Mr. Burnett, Reel 2.
Where did you go from Lucknow?
From Lucknow, we went to a place called Dinapore, which is on the Bengal side of India, Bihar and Orissa area, Bengal side. that would be about January 1934. Now, that was a one-unit station, that's all. It was just one us, one infantry battalion, us, at that time. And those barracks was similar to the ones I've just described at Lucknow. Place different, but the actual buildings themselves was similar to what I've already described. We had nothing at all there, very small civilian population, very small. And there's nothing really to describe about Dinapore. The only thing is we got off the railway station, and the actual barracks was quite a good way from the station, which we had to get off the train and hike it up the road. Very old barracks. There was an old part of the barracks and a new part at that time, that's right. And the old part must have dated back to the ancient Britons, but it was still in use at that time, and it was more near the centre of Dinapore. It had a very large native population, Dinapore, and there was a sort of a big dividing line between the troops and the native population. I remember the guard room was actually boundary line between us and going into the native village. You see, you could not go unless there's any emergency arose, but you just couldn't wander off into the village at all. It was a very big native population. And very religious, you know. Some of them there, aren't they, more than others, and that. And it didn't take a great deal to upset them, see. So we had to be on our guard on that Dinapore. Not a lot to describe about it. Did you want to know what happened while I was at Dinapore, or just want to tell you? Oh, yeah. Well, it was at Dinapore, which is, even though there wasn't a great deal there, to me, I had a lot of interest, because for the first part, there was myself and two other lads. We was sent to Calcutta on a wireless course in Fort William. And it lasted for about 4 months. Well, to us, that was great, see, going to Calcutta. And that also was a 24-hour train journey. A little bit more comfortable, though, than going on a troop train, because then you went as passengers, do you see, in a passenger train. So it was a bit more comfortable. we went on that for 4 months, and looking back over, I appreciate the fact that that was the initial stages of wireless sets being introduced in infantry battalions at that time, you see, because very shortly afterwards they brought out small wireless sets, man-pack sets, which the signals had. And, of course, obviously, that's what we'd been sent there for, to train to use them, and that. That was for four months. We came back to Dinapore. We had an unfortunate incident where we had a small earthquake there while I was there. The main seat of the earthquake, I understand, was a place called Muzaffarpur, which from us you had to go through this native village I'm talking about, down to the River Ganges, which was went by, I'm talking about 3 or 4 miles now from the actual barracks. We'd march through the native area. Then we used to go across the ferry, onto the train, and about a 4 or 5 hours train ride to this town of Muzaffarpur, which had been the seat of the earthquake. And of course, in a measure like that, the nearest infantry battalion always had to send a company of troops, or whatever the situation was. They always had to send some troops for internal security reasons, you know, such as riots and things like that. And we at that time, the company that went, as I say, I was in the signallers, and six signallers went along with them, and we had about 6 weeks there, and their duty was to sort of patrol the town and that, and any damaged property to take care of. And also there's a leper colony there, and I think it was that troops had to be very careful, because there were one or two of these lepers that had got away from this, you know, during the melee, whatever, they'd escaped from this leper colony and that, and so they had the extra precautions to take. We slept that time on the Mazavapair race course, under canvas, and as I say, that's all we did. We just kept in touch with our own unit, and we supplied communications for the company that was there. Do you see, if they had a company in the town, we'd have a signaller with them, you know, and things like that. But that was that. And then we came back from there, and then for 1934, we stopped down on the plains all the rest of that year. So half the battalion went up in the hill station, which they do abroad. And in 1935, halfway through the year, I went along with old signallers up in the hill station. So we left Dinapore for about 3 months. But before we went, we'd got notification that the battalion was going on the frontier. You see, that was 1935, and I think it's about April or May. We got to know, so we had to get down some really good hard training. Dinapore, an area, is very flat, and we had to imagine that we were travelling through mountainous country at times, and you know, going up in the valley of mountain, you know, and throwing pickets up on either side, and learning mountain warfare drill routine. But when we actually went up to the hill station for the rest of the summer season, then you could get down to the proper training, because you had hills all around you, and some big ones and all, and you had to get up them. We stayed up in the hill station for about 3 months. One and a half the battalion had already been and gone. We took their place, and we did a lot of training, all training. We had a lot of recreation too, a very nice place. Chakrata, they called the place. Quite nice. They had a nice cinema. They had a dance hall. They had a very nice market, what we call a bazaar. And, well, the old place was present. You know, it was a nice English atmosphere. And everything was nice and fresh and clean. You can imagine it, you know, being on top of the hill. It was lovely. And then you could look across. You could look across on it and see, that in fact, they were the foothills of the Himalayas, really, do you see? And then you can look across and see some of these high peaks that with the snow on top, and things like that. We hadn't seen snow for years. It was great to see snow. And then we also... well, that was it, you see. The main thing was to get this mountain warfare training done. That was the priority. The next priority was to give you, I'm tapping my hand, I know what she's doing. The next thing was to barrack room life, and then the next thing was your social entertainment side of it, in that order, you see. But you had plenty of freedom. It was more relaxed than it was down on the plains. You could, you know, you had a bit more freedom. Very good. All right, then. When we came down from the hills... Oh, and I forgot to tell you, it was 4 days march up, about 3 days on the train from Dinapore to the Deira Dun. That's what they call the railhead, Deira Dun. Off the Deira Dun, 4 days march up, rest camps each day. And then when you finish, you had your 4 days march down again on the train and back. And when we got back, of course, this would be October time. We're very fit. The people who was the first party who was down had already done a lot of warfare training up there, you see, but then they sort of got back a little bit, you see, because they had to do theirs on flat ground, where we was really clever, you know, we was good at it. And then of course we had about a month to go, then the two halves sort of joined forces, and they did a little bit more. got the gear ready, everything, and then packed up the gear. Packing up, that's right. various other little jobs that wanted doing, I can't remember them all. And then off we went to the next station, which is Razmak. Now then,
could you say a bit more about the training you had to do?
The journey to the frontier.
The actual training that you had to do.
Oh yeah, the mountain warfare training. It's far different to any sort of training that we'd done before. It's a different sort of training altogether. Normal training is flat country. You're doing everybody's doing a training manoeuvre here, round there, and everybody's running forward. What? But mountain warfare is far different. The whole column marches down a valley between hills, shall I put it that way, or even when they're marching up to Hill State, marching up the road. In the days I'm talking about, the column had to be protected from either side. And this is where the mountain warfare drill training came in. We had a column headquarters, and that consisted of the commanding officer and a couple of three officers, and in this case, again, myself, because I was a CO signaller at that time. And we had an intelligence sergeant and an intelligence officer, a proper command group. And then behind us, we had four companies of men, and they were split up into platoons. Each platoon is split up into a section, and each section was a picket. Instantly called them a picket. The object of all that was so that the first company, number 1, 2, 3 and 4 picket. Do you see? You had 3 platoon, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 picket, and so on in that company. So that if the commanding officer said, I want number 12 picket, do you see? He might have selected that one, or he might say, I want the next one in line. Or he might say, give us number 12, because he might think they can do the job better than somebody else. See? Well, me, Private Bennett at that time, I had to get on the side of the road with my signalling flag. I had to run a little bit further back where I'd already come from and contact, and as soon as I got my eye on the signaller of the next company, I had to give him the signal. You see, he knew what was all the signals, because we'd all practiced all this. It might, to anybody else, it was just a flick of a flag, but to him it was a signal, you see. And then I had to turn on it, and while I was signalling, I had to walk backwards with a column. So the column's still on the move, everybody's still moving along. I had to walk backwards, and as soon as I knew that signal had got the message, what I wanted him to get, then I had to turn round and run and catch the end of the column up again. But while I was doing this, that signal had told the company commander of that company, the CO wants to pick it up, see? And by the time I got there, the lads was on the move, they were dashing forward, you see? And that was the object. The object was to signal the next company, get the picket up, bring the picket forward, and the picket commander would go to the commanding officer, and the commanding officer would say, I want 12 rifles. They didn't call them men, call them rifles, you see. I want 12 rifles on that hill, you see, or whatever it might matter, 6 or 12, we'll say 12. And are you sure, Corporal? Yes, well, have a look and make sure. And he had a piece of equipment called a pointer staff. It was sort of stuff like that, then a cross, and then another bit. And he could look down there, and the picket commander could look down that part, do you see? And it all pointed to the same hill in the distance. Are you sure you've got that? Yeah, I've got that, right. Off you go then, 12 rifles up there. He used to gather his 12 fellows together, he already had them. They was laid alongside the roadside, you see. And then he used to go in the middle and say, look, we've got to picket that hill there. Are we ready? Right, off we go. And off they went, you see. They used to go up there, and then the next picket, signal up the next picket, Bennett, right up. Obviously, signal the next picket, come up. I want 12 or 6 on that hill. So he was picketing each hill as you went along. Now, when it got to the rear of the column, the signaller at that end, all he had to do was to, right, wave them back in. Do you see? So you wave the one first in, pull him in, and while they were pulling him that then, the head of the column was sending them out, and so you hedgehogged them all the way down. That's mountain warfare. And it's some bloody big hills up there. Ah, it was. But everybody carried their own kit. Rifles, 25-pound pack, water bottles filled, blanket in the pack, A pair of shoes to change right after you got to camp and everything. And before you got a meal, when you entered the camp, you had to repair the wall, because you always went into a night camp that had a wall round it. You know, you ever seen these walls round fields like hedges? Instead of a hedge, a bit of brick, empty, interlaced stone, similar. And you had to repair that wall before you had a meal. But while he was doing it, the cooks had got their things out and they were cooking a meal. See? And then as soon as you finished, off with your boots, on with your chaplets, we call them. Right? And that was it, the meal. Then you could get your blankets, the other blankets, which were carried on a mule. Each company had its own section of mules and its own mule leader. You went back to the mule lands, got your bedding off there, and then brought it back to your company lands, and that was it. Down for the night. And by the time you'd finished, it was dark. You couldn't go anywhere at all, except for a guard on the wall. But we had an unfortunate incident. This was going up. This was actual mount warfare in its proper state. Not training, but we'd done the training. This is what we're doing proper. And we got to 6 days up, going to Razmag. 5 days, 6 days. I forget now which. And it was the last night anyhow. And there must have been some tribesmen on the loose on the hillside. Because as soon as we got settled down in the camp and all nicely bedded down, bang, bang, couple of three shots. And unfortunately, the RSM was a chap called Kershaw, who was at the back tent to us, because, as I say, we was in the battalion headquarter area. He was wounded and he died through the night. And I think a couple of mules had been shot and one RA sergeant had joined. But I do understand that later on, the liaison officer, I think, I can't remember the name, what they used to call it. I think liaison officer, somebody. Anyhow, they're the people, the political officers. They're the people who went among these tribesmen, you know, from village to village. They went for British government, undercover people, you know. And they actually caught the people who did this. And some years later, I was talking to a chap who had been stationed at an island, a prison island just outside of India, Andaman Islands, I think, I'm not quite certain. And he actually saw this chap who had done the doings, and he was bragging about it. Oh, he said, "I killed your RSM," he said, way back. And he was doing life prison. He was doing life for that. Yeah. And so when we had 1 day's march to go into Razmak itself, well, the custom was for the other infantry battalion in Razmak, they would come down the road, I think it would happen the same in any other frontier station, down the road so far, and meet the new battalion come in and play them in, do you see? But on this occasion, we couldn't have it because we had an unfortunate incident and we were taking a dead body with us, as you might say. And, of course, he was buried next day.
Was there much that you could treat the wounded with when you were marching?
Could we?
Could you treat the wounded at all? Was there any hospital?
We always had our own first aid unit, yes, an REMC doctor, you know. Always had a medical officer with us, yes, could do that. And also we each had our own field dressing as well, tucked away in amongst our gear, you know, in case we was out on a hilltop or something like that, you know, and somebody, something like that, you could do it yourself. But in a case like that, we have the proper medical doctor, yeah, REMC chap. Are we going to carry on with that?
Yes.
Now then. Yes, we've marched into Razmak. Razmak is one of the frontier stations. And it's 72 miles from Banu. Yes, Banu. And it's a mile square. And in that mile square, there's an Indian infantry battalion, there's us, an East Yorkshire infantry battalion, and there are Army Service Corps units, there's a hospital, there's a small native quarter, there's a bazaar, a cinema, and various other little units. All about 4,000 troops altogether with a transport and that. Surrounded by hills, which has got to be guarded 24 hours a day. And these are guarded by pickets sent out from the various units to the hills in their area. Outside of the our sector of the camp, there was a tower, which we call Rifleman's Tower, which we had to look after. And that was done by a mounting a guard, 6 o'clock at night, and then going out of the camp, doing a tactical move for about half a mile across country to this tower, and the picket that was actually on duty, they used to raise the ladder up, or lower it down, I'm sorry, they used to lower it down, and then we used to close in onto the tower, and then up into the tower itself. The old guard handed over to the new one, which was us, and they came down the ladder, and then we lifted the ladder up in, back into the tower itself, one of these mobile things, and that was it for 24 hours. It was fastened up. The tower itself was split up into three portions. There was a downstairs place. We was in the middle floor. There was a downstairs which had stores and ammunition. Then there was a middle part which we slept, and then there was a top part where we had a sentry on patrolling round. I think it was two sentries at a time. I'm not quite sure. It was our job to watch out the country surrounding and keep in touch with the other pickets round the camp, and also to keep in touch with the camp itself. Our signals on duty, the camp itself. That was a 24-hour job, and that had to be done all the time. Each month, the whole camp, less a few maintenance people, used to go out on what we called RASCOL. It was a column from RASMAC, so for short they called it RASCOL. And we had all our equipment, all our transports, food and everything else for 3 or 4 or 5 days. The longest time was out was 5 days. These was purely a flag mark to show the flag going round these various villages and roads and deep into the country, up the highest hills they could find, and just to show the flag, let them know you were still on the job. And then after, as I say, depending how long it was, as long as it was 5 days, we used to come back into RASMAC, all have a bath, all have a good feed, all get paid out what money we had left, and to the cinema or whatever entertainment or a good booze up maybe, you know, it's only cheap, and that was it. Then we did normal training until the next month, and then we went out again. Every month we went out all the way around.
Could you go outside of the camp on your own?
No, you always had to have an escort if you went out the camp. The rifle ranges where we had to fire a course was outside the camp, but then when you went out, it was a lot of people went out together and you had your arms and everything. You never went anywhere without your rifle. And if you had to, if you was out on training or these RASCOLs and you had your rifle with you, which you had, you had also a rifle chain, and the end of that was clipped to your rifle, and at the other end was another one which you put round your wrist, and so that you always had your rifle with you, and even when you were asleep, it was with it was chained to you, because it had been known. I never experienced it myself, but it had been known for these tribesmen to creep their way into a camp and steal somebody's rifle who had been neglectful, you know, and left it laying around. But I never heard of an incident that happening, but only in the past, you know, general gossip. But it must have happened, otherwise they wouldn't produce these rifle chains, which we had to all had one, general issue, and chain your rifle up at night time.
Were you told much about the tribesmen before you went up to
Rome? You was told a little bit. I don't think you was told an awful lot. No, you was told a little bit. You had to be very careful. Now then, there was a type of a tribesman who was very pro-British, and they was in. They might have been in the pay of the British government, but they were called Cassadars. I think I have a photo up there of one, and they used to escort the columns when they were gone. You know, they were the people they were actually tribesmen that were pro-British, and they was armed, and they could disappear onto the side into the hills, you know, but all the time it was their job to watch the column, you see, and some of them was all right. I should imagine someone weren't to be trusted at all, but they're the only things that they had that was, from a unit's point of view, that they were in touch with the tribesmen, you know, they could speak a little bit of English, and they knew the tribe language, the Pathans, and that they knew the language, I forget what, or Pashto, I think they call that language, the frontier language, Pashto, and they kept the battalion informed of the what's going on in the offside of the country, you know, what they're going through, and in general you were prepared, but I don't think there was given a lot of trust, not really. I think there was always amongst themselves, and if you could get away with something, they'd get away with it, you know. But the only thing you could trust, that's all it was.
Did you see any of the villagers?
Did we?
See any
of the
villagers?
Oh, yes. We, quite near Turazmat camp, there was a village. Do you see? No, they might have called that village Razmat for all I know. Do you see? But the typical one, but on one of those photos of a village, and each one of them's got their own tower. All muddy huts, or muddy hut affairs, you know, rambling things, and lots of goats and chickens and little bairns running about, you know, and all like that. Same as any other village, I suppose. But they've each got the tower and that, and they're always at that time village feuds going on, you know, all the